The Rainbow Connection team wishes to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land from which we are broadcasting, the Whadjuk Noongar people. We wish to acknowledge and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging for their continuing culture and contributions they make to the life of this city and this region.
Kaya, and thank you for joining us for Rainbow Connection right here on 100.9 FM and Digital Noongar Radio. You're here with Marley and
Simone.
Nova is Jewish, queer and non-binary. They are an activist, public speaker and the author of Finding Nova, written in 2017. The book is a memoir on gender transition. We're going to be speaking to Nova this evening. Nova is based in Nam. Despite being in lockdown, they are still actively running workshops online with the topics of writing, gender inclusivity, unconscious bias and recruitment. They are a contact point in the Jewish community for other children and families confronting issues of gender and sexuality in their own lives. They have appeared on SBS Insight, Hack Live, One Plus One, The Morning Show and have spoken at the Wheeler Centre, Melbourne Writers Festival, Brisbane Writers Festival, Margaret River Writers Festival, and tonight we are lucky enough to have them on Rainbow Connection.
Tonight they're talking here. That is a huge bio, especially for somebody that is so young.
Yes.
So we're going to go to some tracks now. So stay with us. We're playing Thinking of Me by, who is that, Marley?
That is... Oh, I believe Think of Me is by the Veronicas.
The Veronicas, and we're also playing We Are Young.
Featuring Janelle, Fun, featuring Janelle Monáe. Tonight we are chatting with Nova, a Jewish, queer, non-binary writer, activist and public speaker with a particular focus on issues surrounding gender, sex, culture and sexuality. Thank you for joining us, Nova.
Thank you for having me.
It's so exciting to get to speak to you. You have recently facilitated some writing workshops online for trans and gender diverse young people. Can you tell us about those workshops, please?
Yeah, sure. So I guess there's been quite a few different ones. So within schools and also an ongoing writing group that I've set up with my co-host, Alison Evans, who is a fellow non-binary author within the young adult space. So I guess just, you know, trying to adapt to current pandemic times and move these sort of writing workshops into the online and digital spaces. And it's honestly been quite amazing to see the ways that trans young people will engage online and also just in these areas, like watching them sort of open up and unravel a little bit over the weeks is such a beautiful experience. And it's actually just so reciprocally fulfilling. You know, I don't always feel that way. I do a lot of transgender 101 training in workplaces, which I really love and really value, but it's not always as, I guess, mutually beneficial, I suppose. And working with trans young people is just absolutely fills me right up to the brim.
That sounds so wholesome.
It really is wholesome.
And do you have any more coming up, and how can that people access them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm actually doing one this evening, which is not for young people. It's for people of all ages. That's through Thorn Harbour Health. But I do these writing workshops for trans young people every fortnight through the City of Melbourne. And so they run from 5 p.m. to 6:30 every second Tuesday. And just by going on the City of Melbourne website, you can look up Trans and Gender Diverse Writing Group, and it's completely free. It's every fortnight for people between the ages of 13 to 25, and because it's online, it means that it's so much more accessible for people regardless of where they're tuning in from. So the time that I gave is AEST time, but yeah, it is there for everyone to join. We have a few members from Perth and from all over the country. And as far as like ongoing writing groups for young people or all ages, it's something that I do within schools and workplaces. So I'm always up for talking about new opportunities.
That sounds fantastic. So you wrote Finding Nova in 2017. How did you actually get into it yourself?
That's such a good question. Yeah, I really didn't think that I was going to write a memoir, at least not start doing it at the age of 19. I was like,
wow.
What have I got to write about? Surely not. And many other people said that opinion as well. But it just, I had started writing some kind of memoir and thought, when I'll publish it when I'm 40 or something, or later on in my life where I can finish the other parts of it. But yeah, I was presented with a book deal, which is something that doesn't really happen all that much. I was doing quite a bit of public speaking.
It's very rare. Congratulations. That's huge.
Thank you so much. I mean, I really thought it was a prank at first. And I guess I had this idea that it would be that the publishing industry, even in Australia, would be like Hollywood, and they would try to like manipulate me or make me a sellout or something, or change my narrative. And so I remember I met my publisher and I was like, I just want to let you know I'm an unapologetic feminist and I'm not going to dilute my ideology to be more marketable. And she was like, yeah, great, me too.
Oh.
And I realized that publishing in Australia looks very different to film and television industries around the world.
They're not all evil, yeah.
No, they're not all evil, and it's also pretty, yeah, it's pretty wholesome. It's mostly, like, a women-dominated industry. It's a pretty good space to be.
Amazing. And so you're currently in Victoria?
Yeah, so I live in Naarm. I'm based in Warrandyte at the moment on Wurundjeri land. And, yeah, I live and work here. I do most of my stuff online now. Pre-pandemic, I would travel around the country quite a bit doing that sort of work. But it's been a pretty good opportunity, actually, in some ways, to sort of just consolidate everything that I'm doing and to be offering online sessions. And also got to work on another book or a couple of other books that I'm putting together.
Oh, my gosh. So that's how you're getting through the lockdown. You sound like you're very busy.
I just keep myself as busy as I possibly can.
We spoke to Misty, who's also based in Melbourne, and they were one of the organisers of the Stand By Us conference, which finished up last week. And I thought, oh my goodness, there's so many conferences and books and like there's
everything
actually
coming out of Victoria. Yeah. It's still the place to be.
Yeah.
We've still got our ways. Yeah, look, it's quite amazing to see the ways that people have mobilised in this time, both in their, you know, professional lives, but also in activism and in resistance. I mean, we've seen so much happening with the BLM movement and people really turning out. I think going to the BLM protest was one of the most meaningful experiences during lockdown, to see the ways that people were protesting so respectfully within a pandemic, but also understanding that a global pandemic that exists is also white supremacy and, you know, black lives being lost. And so I think I've been quite blown away by the resilience and the capacity for people in this country and around the world to withstand such a serious and intense experience, and for that to actually mobilize and to just expand the community care that I've also seen in this time is really humbling.
Well, even here in Perth, someone and I both attended the Black Lives Matter protest, and the local Chinese community actually donated over 10,000 masks to make sure that everybody was safe during the protest.
Wow, that's amazing. That is so beautiful.
Which is like an example of, I guess, what you were talking
about. Community coming together, yeah.
Yeah, and also filling the gaps when the government won't, right?
Exactly.
Definitely.
So what advice would you have for young people who may be preparing to come out to their family or friends as transgender?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I get young people who message me sometimes and ask me that. And I think it's a hard one because there is no universal tips and tricks, really, that like coming out is a deeply personal experience. And I guess the whole concept of coming out is kind of challenging, because why should we have to come out of any closet? It's not as if queer people have put themselves in a closet and then decided to open the door. We were kind of forced into one. As babies, you know?
I love that. I have actually said that for years. I don't understand why people should even, you know, have to come out as gay or pan or bi. It shouldn't be anyone's business who you know, who you're sexually attracted to. Nobody goes, hey, guess what? I'm attracted to men, or, you know, like as straight people. Yeah, like, so why should anybody have to do that?
I think telling people, you know, who you're into or, like, who your partner is or whatever is so valid, but I don't really understand why we are straight and cisgender until proven otherwise. And I think that is the thing that I try to queer in the work that I do, is to look less on individuals and onto society and onto these systems that are inherently heteronormative and transphobic. How can we actually pivot the expectations that we put on infants, you know, based on their genitals? How can we pivot that into a completely different landscape and into a much more expansive and evolutionary way of approaching the topic, you know? So I guess to young people, I would firstly say that coming out doesn't necessarily have to happen. Like, if that doesn't feel right for you, there is no right or wrong way to go about it. And also, coming out is not culturally universal. There are a lot of cultures where coming out is not a safe thing to do or a necessary thing to do. You know, I actually think in a lot of ways colonization has made coming out a necessity, when so many cultures have various understandings and still do of many different genders. I think it has to be deeply personal. It has to work for you. I know a lot of people that have come out in the car. That seems to be a trend.
Because you are stuck there.
Yeah, there's no escape.
Can't walk out of the room.
I came out as trans in the car, but I do recommend, if you are going to do that, it's probably best that you're the one driving.
So you can lock the doors, put the child lock on. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no swerving. You know, there was definitely some swerving when I told my mum I was trans. Yeah, so it's just personal, and you got to do it in your way. But I really like the idea of letting people in rather than coming out. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to come out of your safe space. You can, if the person feels safe, bring them into it.
That's a really beautiful way of looking at it.
And it's nice to be able to say, yeah, you don't have to come out. Nobody has to come out. You don't have to come out as straight, so why should you have to come out as anything else?
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're a parent, like, I think it's really important to consider how you can create a house without closets, you know? Like, how can you actually facilitate your child not feeling like they have to come out?
Take the doors off. Come on.
You know, like, but what is... what conversations are you having in your households? Like, are you using gender-neutral language when you're asking your child about their crushes or who they might be interested in? You know, like, are you projecting heteronormativity and cissexism onto your child from birth, or are you trying to engage with this really consciously so that, yeah, it's a house without closets?
Yeah, it's interesting that you kind of bring all that up and placing a gender on a person when they're a baby. My youngest just turned one, and when I was pregnant, people offered me, do you want a baby shower or a gender reveal? And I said, no. Because I just don't think it's, like, really necessary or fair. And my youngest is called River because I was mindful that even though, you know, we refer to River as she, that may not always be the case. So I thought, if I name the baby River, then it's kind of a gender neutral name, and then they can tell me later on if they aren't a girl. And then it, you know.
Yeah, I saw this really beautiful quote once. So I have two quick thoughts on that. One being that I recently read that the person who started gender reveal parties deeply regrets it. Did you?
Yeah, so
she has a non-binary child, and, like, the two have spoken out on it, and that she'd never intended it for it to catch on the ways that it has, which I think is so interesting.
And when you say catch on, you mean, like, a fire.
Yeah.
Several wildfires. Yeah. Oh my God. It's crazy. The things, I feel like the universe is just saying no. I saw this other one where it was a couple with three sons, and they decided to go ahead and do a gender reveal for their fourth upcoming child, and they gave them all guns with so they could shoot these big clouds of chalk out, and one of the sons shot the dad in the face. By the way, according to the gender reveal party, it's another boy. So he got shot in the face with this blue cloud. God. Oh my gosh. If you have a chance, do search that out. It was quite amazing.
Guilty pleasure for gender reveal parties going on. I feel like it's It's part of trans culture, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah.
I wanted to say, though, on the topic of naming, I saw this quote a while back, and I can't remember the source exactly, so forgive me, but it was so beautiful. It said, "May my child's name be a gift that they can return if it no longer fits them."
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yes. I just thought that was so beautiful, you know, like, let's not put our children into these sorts of boxes and categories and cages. Let's give them the most expansive kind of life, and may the things that we teach them and bring to them be gifts that they can use. And then if those things don't serve them or aren't congruent with their identity, you know, to be open to that fluidity and change.
Yeah, I do feel like it's very important to have that dialogue too with your children. I've had a member of my family say that they wanted to be a girl when they were quite young, and that was for a couple of years. And then one day we had this conversation, and they said to me, "Well, I just want to be a girl so that the boys will want to chase me." And I said, you know, sweetheart, you can be either, you know, sex. You can be any sex, and there'll be a boy that wants to chase you, you know. So I said, it doesn't matter. And then that afternoon he said to me, "I want to cut my hair. I think I do want to be a boy." So it's just, it just goes to show that that open dialogue and being able to say, you can love anybody you want. You can be whoever you want. You decide when you're ready. And that's, and so it was a matter of, you know, he had long hair for a little while. He wanted to wear some more feminine clothing. And then he went, "Oh, it's not for me. I just want boys." So,
yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, like, children love to play and to explore. And the more we kind of hold them back from that, the less they get to be creative with themselves, you know, and with their lives.
Yep, exactly. And you just have to let them find their own way and figure out who they are. And and it might change again, so we'll just wait and see.
Just have to be open.
And I think that's the really hard thing sometimes as well about parenting. And, you know, I obviously have to acknowledge that I'm not a parent, and so I can imagine it's extremely complicated and nuanced. But I think that often parents do really have the best intentions in their hearts and their minds, and, you know, they just want to protect their children. And sometimes when they see difference and diversity in their child, what happens is they try to program it out of them because they're so worried about them being picked on or being bullied. And, you know, I really empathize with that experience. But what ends up happening is that parents actually become their child's first bully.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that the children really remember. You know, it's not really going to work to deprogram them, but what it will work is to create a huge chasm between your relationship.
Yeah, and that starts as simply as, you know, do you really want to play chess? Get out there and play football. You know, like, it's as simple, and that's again, often parents just trying to protect, like, their children.
Don't wear that in front of your grandfather. Don't say this. Don't say that. I hate that.
Exactly.
Hate that. Yep. Like, no, this is how my child expresses themselves.
And Marley, tell the story about the accent, please, please.
Okay, so my eldest is 8, her name is Lily, and she really, her favourite show is Steven Universe.
Oh, love that show, good choice.
So she has watched it so much, she's developed, even though we've never been there, an American accent.
And oh my God, I love that.
That's just her thing. And my mum does not agree with that thing, and she's like, "Oh, Marley, I think you should get Lily to speak more Australian." And I'm like,
"Oh,
no."
My God.
I'm like, "No, it's fine. That's just part of her personality, and she'll grow out of it if she wants to." And she's like, "Well, can't you just get her to speak Australian around me?" And then Lily's going,
Australian.
"And Lily's going, no." And she's like, "Oh, she calls me Marley. She doesn't call me Mum. She's saying to my mum, 'Oh, Marley and I were watching Carl Pilkington the other day, and he was really funny.'" And my mum's going, "Carl, it's pronounced Carl. And I'm like,
this is absolutely an episode of Kath and Kim.
Carl. I'm like, Mom, relax.
Listen, Darl, it's Carl.
It's Carl. Carl.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Lily's going, Carl? 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 I'm like, oh my God, you both sound like galahs. Just relax. Lily wants to have an American accent. You don't want her to. She's still going to have one. Just leave it.
Chill out. Oh, my God.
Like, it probably won't be forever. And even if it is, like, who cares?
Who cares? I do not. And I am her mum. So
yep.
That's what's up.
Am I right, Carl?
So funny.
You're right, Darl. I love it so much. Well, we should go to some music and we're going to come back and talk some more to you, Nevo. We're going to play Strawberry and Cigarettes by Troy Sivan and West End Girls by Pet Shop Boys.
And that was Yidiki by Mitch Tambo. You're listening to 100.9 FM and Digital Noongar Radio in Perth. You're here with Simone, Marley and Navo, who we've had a really amazing conversation with, so we're going to let it go even longer.
Yeah, there's still so much more we want to ask you.
Bring it on, I'm ready.
So, you've worked with children. How did they respond to your transition?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess I've worked with children in various capacities. So I've worked with children as a babysitter, a nanny, as a swimming teacher for a couple of years. And I've also worked with children as an author, running writing workshops or running workshops on gender. So it kind of depends which lens or which framework I'm coming into it with. But honestly, I think the reason why I work with children is because they're the best. I have so few challenges with children as I do with adults. I think adults are much more difficult, as much as they like to think they're not. And I think because also what's happening is you're coming up against so much more social conditioning and so many more years of unlearning that needs to be done, whereas with young people, you can just present an idea and they're often like, yeah, of course there's an alien in the room. Like, that makes sense, you know? And so with my swimming kids, for example, I used to say, you know, they would look at me and be like, oh, you've got nail polish on, that's for girls. And I'd say, okay, is, you know, short hair only for boys and are pants only for boys and what things are for boys and what things are for girls? And, you know, if you as a boy were to wear nail polish, would that make you a girl? And just having those kind of conversations, and slowly they would just be like, yeah, okay, I guess that makes sense, you know. And I'd say, well, I'm actually a boy and a girl. Like, I'm both of those things and I'm actually just me. My name's Navo, nice to meet you, you know. And it doesn't really take very long for them to just be like, okay, cool. Like, I know so many kids who, you know, have been around someone changing their name, and they're usually the one correcting the adults. You know, they just kind of clock into it pretty fast because they don't have the same defense mechanisms in place.
That's so true. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I had these kids that I was babysitting, and, you know, I hadn't seen them actually for a couple of years, and in that time I had started testosterone and sort of engaged in my medical transition, and I came over and their mum was like, look, they're probably going to have some questions for you. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And, you know, eventually they asked me only one question. They said, so, do you have boy bits or girl bits? And I thought about it for a bit, and I was like, I just have me bits.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, cool. You know, because they've only got me bits. They've only got, like, their bodies are only in relation to themselves. They're not old enough to have interacted with other people's bodies in those ways, you know. So they're not relational to anyone else. They are just relational to themselves. And that's how it's always really felt for me too, you know.
Yeah, it shouldn't matter what's there.
It sort of when my eldest was really small, she had a bath with two of my much younger cousins, and they were, like, very confused. They're like, why is there a straw?
And that's the thing, kids are curious, you know, like, they're interested in these sort of topics, and often they don't, like, they aren't that confusing once you actually explain it to them. And when you introduce kids to these things, like, the younger they are, then the more they're open to it, you know, and especially now when we're we are detaching from these really archaic notions of what it means to be a boy and what it means to be a girl. You know, we're not necessarily letting genitals dictate the colors that they can have their room painted or the toys that they can play with. You know, we are really stretching into a new era of embracing kids playing with whatever they want and wearing whatever clothes is like comfortable and suitable and probably easy to wash rather than color-coded genitals. And so I think, yeah, having those conversations earlier, obviously in a child appropriate way, which isn't very difficult, I think is so important.
In the end, they just came to the conclusion they thought she just must be a Simpson.
I mean, you're giving these kids Ken dolls, right? If we want to talk about, like, talking about bodies, like, that's not such a good way.
That's so true, yeah.
They're like, where's the smooth area?
I was really proud of my kids because I've had all these conversations with them, and I have a friend who is a trans woman, and they asked where are your kids, because there were lots of pictures in her house, and she said, oh well, they live with their mum. Like, she didn't know how to explain it, and she kind of looked at me, they live with their mum, and they went, oh wait, but you're their mum. And he said, oh, she has, you know, they have two mums. And they went, oh, okay, and just ran out of the room. And and she sort of looked at me and went, I thought that I was going to have to explain a lot more than than that. And they just went, like, yep, no worries.
Hatred and prejudice is, like, breeded in. Like, it's educated. It's not something that you are just born with. It's something you develop over time, you know. So when you do raise children in pretty open and loving and inclusive environments, they're not going to process information in that same way, you know. And that's why, like, so I read over Zoom at the moment every week. I read children's stories for my my nibblings, which is a gender neutral term for niece or nephew. It's like sibling but nibbling. I also love it because they're so cute, you and you nibble them.
I wondered where that came from.
For them, and it's really important to me when I look for these storybooks to make sure that they are really diverse in the representation of the characters. You know, like, I specifically look for First Nations stories, for characters of colour, for female protagonists, for trans and gender diversity, for single parents as well. Like, one of my nibblings has a sole parent, and you know, lots of stories about two parents can be pretty full on, just all that sort of stuff. And then when I can't find diverse books, I often just change the pronouns. So when they're always about men or boys, I just change it to she, her pronouns, or they, them. Just reinvent new lessons.
I'm just going to edit this for you.
I feel like it's important to bring up Rabble Books and Games, which is a local bookstore in Maylands, and they have been receiving criticism because they've taken the stance to phase out J.K. Rowling because they felt that wasn't inclusive.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is, if somebody comes in and wants to order it, that's fine, but they'll donate the proceeds to Transfolk of WA.
Wow, that's really beautiful. That's an amazing initiative.
Yeah, it's really, like, it's really cool. It's funny how people have, they've faced quite a big backlash from a lot of people, and it's like, dude, you can still order it from them.
Yeah, it's also available literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, this is the one shop that's taking a stand, you know?
That's totally.
Because they're saying nobody, like, they're very inclusive. They're very, they make a point of,
they have drag story hour, you know, like, they always have a lot of Indigenous books and you know, queer friendly literature. Like, they're just great.
I just feel like I want to counteract all the 1-star ratings
they're getting because of this stuff.
Is totally unfair in my
opinion. Yeah, totally unfair, but that's okay. The people who love them truly love them.
Absolutely.
And will support them. So hopefully that'll keep
happening. Yeah, that's so good. Thank goodness. That's what community looks like. You know, you make the right choices and people will have your back.
So earlier we were talking about the concept of coming out and how it may or may not you know, be for everybody. I was listening to your story on the Queer Stories podcast, which...
Was that the one about babies?
The baby da?
Yeah.
Yes. You said you really enjoy confusing people and you've made a hobby of coming out. Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it wasn't necessarily intentional at the start. But I think part of, you know, the fluidity of gender and sexuality is kind of these phases that we go through. And, you know, I use the word phase really consciously because I think it has historically been weaponized against queer people as a way of invalidating our identity. But I think everything we go through as a people are phases, and that's part of what's so beautiful about being human, that we are always able to reinvent ourselves and we're not static. So I guess, you know, I came out at 15 as bisexual. I came out again at 15 as a lesbian. I came out at 17 as a trans man, and then probably again at 18 as non-binary. And I just feel like I come out every couple of years just to keep people on their toes. But that's why I love the term queer, for example, because if people ask me what I am and I say I'm queer, sometimes they leave just as confused as when they got there, which is great because maybe it's none of their business.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, there's some people who it's not until they're in their 30s or 40s that they realise that they might be gay or bi. So it's I feel like people are, like, you know, their sexuality and gender can be fluid.
Yeah, and I've found, you know, as my gender has changed, my sexuality has changed as well, because it can often be very relational, you know. So I really identified strongly as a lesbian, and then when I first transitioned, I considered myself, I guess, a straight binary man. But then as I came to embrace and changed how I related to others. So, you know, I date people of all genders now, and I'm attracted to all different kinds of people, and I've found that that has really evolved in time.
Yeah. You were a contributor to Kindred 12 Kia hashtag Love Aussie Stories. So what does it mean to you, expanding on that, to be queer in Australia?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to touch on, because, you know, so much of the Love Aussie hashtag, for example, is about getting young readers more engaged with young adult writing in Australia, because so much of the work that we read is from abroad, and so to really embrace our local authors and the stories that they're telling, and especially own voices stories, so, you know, when people are writing about their lived experience, I think is really crucial. For me, I feel really proud to be queer. I don't always feel really proud to be in Australia. I think that we have a pretty warped perception of ourselves, where we think that we're a very progressive nation that is super inclusive and switched on about this stuff, but we still have so much further to go in the ways that we interact with First Nations people, and, you know, are one of few countries to still no longer have a treaty with our First Peoples. And so, yeah, I think there's a really far way to go, but I feel really grateful to be in intersectional queer activist spaces where I can learn and grow and hopefully leverage the privilege that I hold as a settler on this land to stand in solidarity with as many other minority groups as possible.
And the combination of religion and queerness can also be problematic. Can you tell us what it's like being part of the Jewish community and queer as well? Because that's a whole nother kettle of fish.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think when we create this dichotomy between religion and queerness, it's often through a pretty Anglo-Christian Catholic lens. And I think obviously that really depends, but that's the experience that I've had, is that people are often like, how can your religion and your queerness not be at odds with each other? And it's like, well, because the ways that I practice Judaism and the ways that my community looks is really different from other religions or other ways of processing those kind of spaces. So for me, you know, Judaism is a culture first and foremost, in which religion is a part of it, but not always a necessary part. Like, there's a lot of atheist Jews, for example, and so, you know, for me, being Jewish is so much about language, music, food, for sure, humour, community, the ways that we hold each other, the ways that we hold ourselves, ritual, ancestors, their like spirituality. There are so many other aspects that come into it. And so, you know, obviously in more religious circles within Judaism, the diversity of queerness isn't always hugely accepted. But within the space that I occupy, there's a lot of room for that and for that kind of individuality. And also, again, like, colonization has had such huge impacts on the ways that we view the gender binary, but in real fact, Judaism has between 6 to 8 different genders represented in some of our holy texts. That's just not been something that has been spoken about. Very
much. Wow.
I never knew.
Me neither.
Thank you for telling us.
Yeah, it's funny that there are so many different places, like even American Indigenous people, Indians, they actually have extra genders in there,
yeah.
You know, so I can't remember how many, but there's something like 6 or 8 or...
And transgender...
Yeah, well, it depends on which Native American tribe, but many different tribes in Turtle Island have various understandings of gender, and most cultures actually around the world do as well. Once you start to really scratch the surface, there is so much there. You know, you've got Javanese Wadia, you have Indian Hydra, you have Hawaiian Mahu, Samoan Fafafine, Aboriginal brother boys and sister girls. Like, there are so many different understandings of gender that, you know, I would argue the way that we conceptualize male and female or men and women is actually a phase and a pretty new colonial invention.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely the colonial mindset.
And I have not done a lot of research, but what I have done has made me realise that transgender people or people that weren't within the gender binary were actually celebrated, and they were, you know, I don't know why that...
It was often considered a gift.
Yes, yeah, that's what I mean.
To be able to be... To
hold
understand.
Characteristics yep. from...
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really amazing interactive map, actually. There's an amazing interactive map on pbs.org's website, which is a map of gender diverse cultures. Now, it is in English, and English is a very colonizing language, so the ways that these genders are described is not going to be necessarily translatable to English. But if you want to have a look at some of those different genders, this interactive map on PBS will track around the world, and you can kind of click on different spaces.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, we're going to get all over that.
Yeah, it's really great.
Amazing. We cannot thank you enough for joining us today. Can you tell us where we can follow you or find out more about the workshops?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go onto my website, which is nevozisin, nevozisin, .com. You can also follow me on Facebook, Nevozisin Author, or on Instagram, Nevozisin. I'm all over social media because I'm a millennial and it's a glorified my people.
It's where we live, yeah.
But yeah, please get in touch. You can also contact me for bookings in your workplaces or your schools at my email, which is just nevozisin@gmail.com. I'm doing online training in this time. You can save a lot of money on travel. But yeah, please reach out if you need resources. I'm also really happy to provide and discuss.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And
thank you for having me.
It's been such a pleasure speaking to you.
It has.
Oh, thanks.
So much so that we've run way over time. But
Hashtag sorry not sorry.
Sorry not sorry. Yeah, it's been amazing talking to you. And just a reminder that we do take mental health very seriously here on Rainbow Connection. So we'd like to share with you some useful contact numbers and resources that you can use.
You can call these Australian Crisis Lines and Professionals Lifeline 24/7, which is 13 11 14, or you can go to lifeline.org.au. There's a suicide callback service, which is 24/7 again, 1300 659 467, or suicidecallbackservice.org.au. There's Beyond Blue 24/7, 1300 224636, beyondblue.org.au, Kids Helpline 24/7, 1-800-55-1800, kidshelpline.com.au. QLife provides Australia-wide anonymous LGBTI plus peer support and referral for people wanting to talk about a range of issues, including sexuality, identity, gender, bodies, feelings or relationships. Or if you can choose to go to the chat, which is on qlife.org.au from your local time zone from 3 p.m. to midnight every day, or you can call 1-800-184-527. And we'd also like to recommend local organisation Connection and Wellbeing Australia, who we know from experience is LGBT plus friendly and provides excellent suicide prevention training.
And now we're going to go to a couple of tracks. We're going to play Holla Back Girl by Gwen Stefani and Stay With Me by Sam Smith. And that was Take Me to Church by Hozier. And you are listening to Rainbow Connection on 100.9 FM and digital Noongar radio. And now it is news time. We'd like to acknowledge and thank Scott Patrick Mitchell, who ran and emceed the annual LGBTIQA plus spoken word event for Perth Poetry Festival called Outspoken. Thank you so much to everybody who was involved, including Isadora Alexander, Zenatalia Imbram, Danny Clary, a.k.a. Love, Bron Bateman, author and memory and of Memory and Furniture, by Fremantle Press, Fable Goldsmith, 2019 winner of the XYZ Award for Innovation in Spoken Word, 2017 Australian Poetry Slam champion and current co-manager of the National Young Writers Festival, the incredible Jesse Oliver, and Marla Bishop. What a beautiful collective who helped raise $225 for the Rainbow Connection team. We cannot thank you all enough.
Thank you so much. Moving on to item number two. This one is for Mel, I feel. SBS has reported that Harry Styles is in talks to star alongside Lily James in an adaptation of the novel My Policeman, a queer romance set in the 1950s. Styles has previously addressed his own sexuality, stating he believes sexuality is something that's fun. Speaking to The Guardian, the singer and actor continued, "It's not like I'm sitting on an answer and protecting it and holding it back. It's not a case of I'm not telling you because I don't want to tell you. It's not, oh, this is mine and it's not yours. It's who cares? Does that make sense? It's just who cares." Styles went on saying that he doesn't make his creative choices through the lens of sexual identity. "Am I sprinkling in nuggets of sexual ambiguity to try and be more interesting? No," he said. "In terms of how I want to dress and what my album sleeve's going to be, I tend to make decisions in terms of collaborators I want to work with. I want things to look a certain way, not because it makes me look gay or because it makes me look straight or because it makes me look bisexual, but because I think it looks cool. And more than that, I don't know, I just think sexuality is something that's fun. Honestly, I can't say I've given it any more thought than that."
Ellen DeGeneres has taken to social media to address the toxic workplace allegations. Her tweet reads, "Today we are starting a new chapter with an accompanying video. Things that happened here should never have happened," she said. "My intention is always to be the best person I can be. And if I've ever let someone down, if I've ever hurt their feelings, I am so sorry for that. If that's ever the case, I've let myself down and I've hurt myself as well." DeGeneres, who came out as a lesbian in 1997, explained that the "to be kind" philosophy she has been known for was inspired by the death of Tyler Clementi, a gay teenager who was outed online in 2010 and died by suicide. Ellen is determined that her show should be a place of happiness and joy for her audiences. BuzzFeed first published the allegations in July based on interviews with 36 former staffers. Three top producers have already walked from an internal investigation by Warner Brothers, which found some flaws in the show's daily management. A reminder that to you, if you or anyone you know requires crisis care, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Something a little bit more fun and celebratory now. Schitt's Creek have won big at this year's Emmy Awards.
Woo!
Myra got her Emmy. The BBC News has reported that Schitt's Creek won 9 prizes, breaking the Emmy's record for most wins in a single season for comedy.
Wow.
Schitt's Creek won the Best Comedy Series prize, with the show's creators, father and son Eugene and Daniel Levy, picking up Best Comedy Actor and Best Supporting Comedy Actor, respectively. Catherine O'Hara was named Best Comedy Actress, with Annie Murphy winning Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series. The show, which can be streamed here on Netflix and iView, follows the wealthy Rose family, who are forced to move to a motel in a small town after losing their enormous fortune. Our show, at its core, is about the transformational effects of love and acceptance, and that is something we need more of now than we've ever needed before, said Dan Levy, as he accepted the prize for Best Comedy Series. Paying tribute to his son, Eugene Levy added, "I want to thank this young man who took our fish out of water story and transformed it into a story of inclusivity, a castigation of homophobia, and a declaration of the power of love. So thank you, Daniel."
Amazing. What a great way to end.
I love Schitt's Creek. I know I'm not supposed to be biased with the news, but come on. Schitt's Creek is the bomb.
And, well, obviously a lot more people think that because they won 9 awards. Eights. Oh, my gosh. Amazing. And that brings us to the end of our show. We have had such a fun time today.
Yes. Thank you, Navar, for joining us.
It was so great. And just a reminder to everyone listening to Rainbow Connection, we are on every Thursday between 6 and 7 p.m. And thank you so much for joining us. We'll obviously be here next week.
Also, happy Bisexual Awareness Day, Visibility Day for yesterday. Don't forget to check in on your best boys, gals and non-binary pals.
And we're gonna finish the show with a couple of tracks. Better in Black by Thelma Plum, Killer Queen and Ornament by Electric Fields.